It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, if you're one of the many Wisconsinites who roll that recycling bin out to the curb, you may be interested in learning about what you might be doing wrong. We'll talk to a Wisconsin expert about how to be a more informed recycler. First, U.S. intelligence agencies say that satellite images show North Korea is expanding a weapons factory and building new intercontinental ballistic missiles. That's according to reports in the Washington Post. This comes just over a month after President Trump declared North Korea was no longer a nuclear threat after meeting with leader Kim Jong-un in Singapore. That meeting led to an agreement to continue negotiations with the goal of denuclearizing the Korean Peninsula in return for security guarantees from the United States. The new satellite images haven't been the only bump in the road. Earlier this month, North Korea called talks with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo regrettable. Jean Lee is the director of the Center for Korean History and Public Policy at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. She also opened the first Associated Press Bureau in Pyongyang, the North Korean capital, in 2012. Jean, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Great to join you.
Well, this is all coming via this report in the Washington Post, a lot of this information. Can you tell us what we know about this site in question and the types of weapons that might be manufactured there?
The report published yesterday by the Washington Post is based on interviews that the Post reporters did with U.S. officials, so unnamed officials, who were analyzing satellite imagery. And this is a really crucial piece of information for us. You know, we don't have much access on the ground in North Korea, so we do tend to look at North Korea from above, from the skies. And satellite imagery is very useful for us in telling us what they're doing on the ground. And what they're reporting, based on what intelligence is finding, is that the activities, there's a lot of activity at this particular set of buildings just outside Pyongyang where we believe the North Koreans have been building or had in the past built ICBMs. These are intercontinental ballistic missiles that are designed specifically to strike the United States.
And more broadly, what do we know about North Korean activity when it comes to building and developing long-range missiles and their nuclear program in this month or so since talks with President Trump and Kim Jong-un?
Now, it should not come as a complete surprise because, honestly, the North Koreans, the leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, said that he would halt testing, but I don't see anywhere that he said he would stop building or that he would not maintain the missile technology. And so we shouldn't be completely surprised that this activity has continued. I do believe that the North Koreans will continue to keep that program up throughout this process. Remember that the leader of North Korea agreed to work toward the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. At no point did he say, I'm going to give my weapons up completely, unilaterally. So this is part of a long process. And during that process, I think we'll likely see them keeping their program up to date. Now, just to give you a little bit of context, every type of activity, whether it's their missiles or their nuclear weapons, this is all banned activity. This is all banned by the UN Security Council, so it's in violation of international agreements. This predates all of these negotiations with the United States. They have, however, been testing nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles for years now, and that activity ramped up under Kim Jong-un, who has been very keen to be able to call his country a nuclear power. They have now gotten to the point, at this particular facility that we're talking about, they've built at least two of these ICBMs, and we had two launches late last year that were frightening, to be honest. These were test launches, and they did launch them straight up rather than across, just to show that they could launch them and that they, if they were sent in the direction of the United States, they could conceivably reach the mainland United States, so reach us here. And they did prove that. And after that, Kim Jong-un did say, okay, well, now I've proven that I've done that. We don't need to test them any further. But he has not said we're going to stop building them.
That said, as you say, it's no surprise that this kind of activity would continue. Do you view the negotiations between President Trump and Kim Jong-un as a starting point, as a positive thing that is moving our relations in a better direction between North Korea and the U.S.?
I am a bit critical of the way this happened in the sense that having a summit with the United States president, arguably the leader of the most powerful country in the world, gives the leader of North Korea a huge amount of legitimacy. And he himself has not given up that much in return. So normally with diplomacy, you would say that that is the end point. That is a reward that you give a country or the leader of a country that is a pariah nation like North Korea at the end of a process. But here we are. We have a president in the White House who does things very differently. We're at this point now where he has chosen to do this differently, and so we have to look at it as a starting point. There's a lot of criticism that President Trump has said, look, I've taken care of the nuclear threat. No, that's not true. I think that the nuclear threat has not been completely resolved, but we are now in the start of a process, and it will take a long time, but it's better to be talking to the North Koreans than to have the provocations. Any further testing, if they decide to go back to testing their nuclear weapons or their ballistic missiles, are going to be incredibly dangerous at this point. And so that is what we do not want. And I speak from the perspective of somebody whose parents live in South Korea. Most of my family is there. And I certainly don't want either the South Koreans or the North Koreans to be living with this shadow of war. And so if we can get to a point with the North Koreans where we're on a process, whether it's a peace process or a process toward denuclearization, that is a much better dialogue to be having than the fire and fury that we were having last year.
Talking to Jean Lee with the Center for Korean History and Public Policy at the Wilson Center about the latest between the U.S. and North Korea. Jean, denuclearization is a word that's thrown out a lot. Is it possible that we have two different meanings? The U.S. Thinks that means North Korea has no nuclear capability. North Korea thinks it means, yeah, we're not doing any more testing. We're not developing beyond what we already have.
There are different understandings of what this means, and this is one of my main concerns. To be honest, the North Koreans have been very consistent when they talk about denuclearization. When they talk about denuclearization, Kim Jong-un is saying, listen, I'm with you. I agree we shouldn't have nuclear weapons. I would love to see a nuclear weapons-free world. But you give up yours, and then I'll give up mine. And the United States is a verified nuclear power. The United States had nuclear weapons before the creation of the NPT, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and so does not have to sign on to it. And so North Korea is saying, hey, just like you, we have nuclear weapons. You give yours up and we'll give up ours. And so I think that, and from Washington, the understanding may have been, no, we're talking about you giving up your weapons and not expecting to give up anything in return in terms of their nuclear program or our nuclear program. And so there is a gap in understanding of what the definition is, and this is going to be a major problem in these negotiations going forward.
Now, we're looking at this from the United States. I understand you recently traveled to Seoul in South Korea to talk to people there, find out the attitude toward these talks and toward relations between South and North Korea. What are you seeing there?
It's so fascinating. You know, over the course of my career as a journalist, I've really seen South Korea just go on this emotional roller coaster over the years. They just recently came out of a 10-year period that was very hardline in terms of its North Korea policy because it was run by a series of conservative presidents. But we now have a very progressive-minded president in the Blue House, President Moon Jae-in, who has always campaigned on a policy of engaging the North Koreans. He is the son of refugees from North Korea who came down during the war. So he has family in North Korea. So he's a very different vision of how he wants his country and North Korea to coexist. I have to say that although South Koreans are extremely skeptical because they have been here before, they have gone through the whole process of being hopeful and then having their hopes dashed by North Korean provocations, still, they would much rather have peace than war. They are the ones who live there. They know that their future is intricately intertwined with what happens with North Korea. And so they are trying to ride this wave of reconciliation. And so that gap as well, between this gap of the optimism in South Korea and the pessimism and skepticism that we have here in Washington, concerns me because I think that any time there is a gap in the understanding between Seoul and Washington of what our goals are, what we would call a gap or any kind of distance in that alliance, that traditional South Korean-U.S. alliance, That is something the North Koreans will take advantage of. And so that is something that we analysts are looking at very carefully and trying to make sure that the governments in Seoul and Washington are in communication and are coordinated.
I've read that there are efforts in South Korea to have more commercial ties with North Korea. There's a sports diplomacy that's been going on, efforts to dial down tensions at the border.
Yeah.
Is there some kind of hope that increased contact between South and North Korea leads to changes in North Korean society and maybe North Korean government?
That's a strategy. And you only really have to look at Germany to see how that works. They called it a kind of trust politics. So trying to expose the East Germans to Western concepts and get them hooked on it. And that's a little bit of what I think the South Koreans want to do. They want to show the North Koreans, look at what we can offer you. And remember, like I said, it's been 10 years of a hardline policy and almost virtually no interaction between the South Koreans and the North Koreans. 10 years for my students, my university students in South Korea, is half their lives. So South Korea also needs to get their people used to the idea of a future that involves some engagement with the North Koreans. I do think that we should acknowledge that it really varies by generation how the South Koreans feel. Older South Koreans like my parents, who remember the country as one, feel very differently than, say, younger South Koreans who grew up in a democratic South Korea, have no interaction with the North Koreans and feel no connection with them. And so it really depends when you were born, how you feel about North Korea, and whether you see North Korea as part of your future. But what I tell them is, regardless of how you feel about the North Koreans will make sure that you have a role, and whether that means they provoke you or they work with you peacefully, they are going to make sure that you are working with them because they are completely reliant on South Korea as part of their future. And so it's not really a choice that the South Koreans have, and they're starting to realize that.
Jean, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Great to be with you.
Jean Lee is the director of the Center for Korean History and Public Policy at the Wilson Center. She was with us to talk about where relations stand now with North Korea.